This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Because I screwed up last week calling episode 54 episode 55, this is MongoCast episode 54, but really 55, for September 10th, 2006. Does that make sense?
Your number one source for all your internet needs, GoDaddy.com has new domain names, transfers, and renewals for as low as $1.99. Plus, check out their hosting plans, website builders, secure certificates, and much more. Plus, as a MongoCast listener, enter code HARRY, that's H-A-R-R-Y, when you check out and save an additional $5 off any order of $30 or more. Get your piece of the internet today at GoDaddy.com. Don't you guys like this music?
Yeah, it's excellent. Very good.
John Williams at his best, Andrew.
Yeah. I think I'm the next Bono.
It's a drunk John Williams recording. He got back after a few drinks and thought, I'm going to have a quick on the keyboard. and that came out.
Jamie, we don't appreciate that kind of language.
Yeah, really, especially. Well, you're halfway there.
What, keyboard? Keyboard, yeah. It's pretty disgusting, isn't it? The word keyboard.
Welcome everyone to the show, but Ben, what's up? There's a lot of noise going on.
I'm in my library, and my Spanish teacher is trying to talk to me right now while I'm trying to record this.
Can you tell her to shut up, please?
No, I can't do that. They said cayete.
Anyway, to the introductions.
I'm Ben Chain.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Jamie Lawrence.
And this is late. No, it's not the latest. This is the show where we bring you the latest in Harry Potter news, theories, discussions, and lots of Potter pickles, and it's been catching on, and I couldn't be more proud.
And Moundridge High School libraries.
Yeah. Ben, what is there? No one else in your, how many people are in that library? It's kind of quiet.
Andrew, no one's in
what?
There at all. It's Ben's personal school library. You see, in Moundridge, each person gets their own library, complete with a sort of kitchen, bedroom. Yeah. You know, plasma TV, all that kind of stuff.
I'm sitting on a giant, soft, comfy chair, which is very, very comfortable. And yeah,
you get three of those, don't you, Ben?
Yeah, three of those. And actually, there's a kid on the couch laying down and staring at me right now.
Ask him what he thinks of Harry Potter.
Hey, what do you think? What do you think of Harry Potter? He doesn't know.
Ask him if he's on pot, because it certainly sounds like it.
My friend wants to know if you're on pot. No, he's not on pot.
No.
We'll go around and get more opinions from Mountain High School students here in a bit.
Ooh, that sounds exciting.
Sounds very exciting.
But before we do anything else, Micah Tannenbaum is in the MuggleCast News Center with the past week's top Harry Potter news stories.
Lord Voldemort was voted the number one villain in the Big Bad Read, an online Bloomsbury poll to find the UK's favorite literary villain from a children's book. Here's what Joe had to say about this honor. I am thrilled and honored beyond words that Lord Voldemort has been voted best villain in the Big Bad Read poll. I'm not sure how he would react to knowing that he won a Muggles Unpopularity poll, a mixture of pleasure that you recognized his power and menace, coupled with fury at your nerve at mentioning his real name, I think. His author, however, is absolutely delighted. MuggleNet staffer Natalie attended the premiere of Driving Lessons starring Rupert Grint and Julie Walters in London's Leicester Square. She managed to do a short interview with Rupert Grint and also spoke briefly to Emma Watson, Julie Walters, and Bonnie Wright. You can check those interviews out over on MuggleNet.com. And speaking of Driving Lessons, it hit theaters Friday in the UK, and to coincide with its release, a tea party was held earlier in Edinburgh. According to the Daily Mirror, J.K. Rowling went along to support Rupert. She tells The Ticket she is halfway through writing writing the seventh and possibly final book, but the 41-year-old Scottish author is keeping tight-lipped over rumors she's planning to kill off Harry. I'm up to about 750 pages now, but I'm not telling anyone what happens to Harry, she says. I've just come along to support Rupert, who's absolutely terrific in driving lessons. Just keep in mind that the Daily Mirror is a British tabloid, not exactly known for its accurate reporting. Pope Benedict XVI's senior exorcist claims that Harry Potter books contain innumerable positive references to magic, the satanic art. He's quoted as saying, "Behind Harry Potter hides the signature of the King of the Darkness, the Devil," he told Vatican Radio. And according to the Daily Mail newspaper in London, he added that the books attempt to make a false distinction between black and white magic, when in fact the distinction does not exist, because magic is always a turn to the devil. Yeah, you know, I always find myself going into hypnotic trance, floating above my bed, while chanting indecipherable languages after I finished a reread of Prisoner of Azkaban, don't you? You're a senior exorcist. How about becoming a lawyer? At least then people will believe what you say 20% of the time as opposed to 10% of the time, and I hear the pay is better too. Moving on, a recent interview was conducted with Alec Hopkins, the actor portraying young Severus Snape in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. He discusses filming, talking with Alan Rickman, and how he ended up with the role. Entertainment Weekly has ranked the fourth Harry Potter film, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, number 36 on its list of the best high school movies of all time. That's all the news for this September 10th, 2006 edition of MuggleCast. Back to the show.
Okay, thank you, Micah. A couple announcements before we move along. T-shirts, MuggleCast t-shirts, purchase your t-shirts. Okay, thanks, bye. Also, yeah, Podcast Alley, don't forget to vote. It's a new month. Don't forget, Boys and Girls Leaky Mug live in Los Angeles, California on September 28th, 7 p.m. at the Borders in... Borders of Westwood in L.A. Yes, it's going to be a fantastic event. We're all going to be there. So come out and support, represent, and wear your MuggleCast t-shirts.
Say hello.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
But please do RSVP on leakymug.com so we know that you're coming. Listener rebuttals this week, Zoe.
No, let me do that. I'm going to read this one.
Oh, okay.
Our first listener rebuttal comes from Zoe Macleod, 17.
McLeod.
17 from Newport Beach, California, right there in the heart of the OC. Hey guys, I love the show. Anyway, I was just thinking maybe Sirius did have the mirror with him when he fell through the veil, but the reason that Harry couldn't contact him was because he had, say, Padfoot instead of Sirius Black. If James and Sirius did make the two-way mirrors, it would make sense that they would use their nicknames like it did on the Marauders map. Just wondering what you guys think.
Haven't we got to assume, though, that if he went through the veil with his mirror, that he's still alive down there, sort of, you know, bored out of his mind?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just sitting down there eating Lucky Charms, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, he is. He is. Well, Andrew's dad went to the...
the veil.
Went to Mysteries and sort of... put his hand through. Put his hand through bed. It's like, hey, Sirius, you're getting a bit hungry down there, right?
And then there was that whispering behind the veil, thanks, mate. But I think we've discerned that it's not the killing curse that hit Sirius when he fell back into the veil to begin with, because he like had time for his eyes to widen with shock.
It's the hungry
curiosity.
Curse,
yeah, it was kind of like, what's going on? So he might still be alive down there, just eating Lucky Charms.
Eric, you've just completely ruined that beautiful moment when his eyes widened by using an overused, Americanized expression like, hey, what's going on? Sirius did not think, hey, what's going on? Trust me.
Okay, Jamie,
stuff went through his mind like, oh my god, I am never going to see my godson again. Oh my god, my house. Oh my god, all my friends. Please don't cheapen it by saying that he thought, hey guys, what's going on here, dude?
Well, no. It said that he had an expression of mixed shock and curiosity on his face. Hey, what's going on? Seemed to depict that well. Though he could have also been saying, "Oh, well, I've got a peaceful, easy feeling."
I don't think he thought of singing.
Well,
in those last
perhaps he didn't.
Of,
maybe he just thought that he said, "This is a particularly interesting phenomena that is being observed right now. I wish that I would not be falling backwards, but
rather forwards, to the great delights of the Ministry of Magic."
Yes.
Right.
Interesting point, though. Wait. Back to, we never really responded to the actual rebuttal.
No, we did. Oh, well, I think it's. I don't think that's correct, because even though it's, I think it would have came with extra instruction if you know, Sirius would have given Harry a little bit more in the note if he knew, if he had to say Padfoot instead of Sirius Black.
Right, Eric makes a fair point.
Or Harry would go up to it and say, well, this thing's broken because I say Sirius Black and it doesn't show me him. And then he would throw it and break it.
But it's not future. I don't mean future. I mean, it's not like sort of security proof, you know. It's, I mean, that doesn't make sense, but you know what I mean. It's not, you know, anyone could walk up to it and say Sirius Black, whereas the name Padfoot is only known to a few people. So
that's true.
More secure.
It's like, yeah, it's more secure.
Well, whereas the Marauder's Map, you need to specifically say what, I solemnly swear I'm up to no good. Do you mean like that kind of secure? Like it's not that?
Yeah. Kind of. It's like if you knew it was Sirius's, then you could just walk up to it and say Sirius Black, whereas, you know,
or,
you saying know, Padfoot, you've got to actually think about
it. Yeah, and if they were the only pair in the world, you could just say Other Mirror, and it would probably work.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Next rebuttal.
Our next rebuttal comes from Jimmy Rose. In your last episode, there was some discussion about the
Hold on, wait a second. Hold on.
What?
It's interesting how Ben suddenly wants to do all this reading. I kind of think he's showing off for the crackhead.
I'm showing off for the two people in the library. I've done.
You charging
before.
Them both rent, Ben, or are you
what?
Or is it just like a? Are you charging them both rent in your personal
library? Yes,
or
I am.
Yeah,
he's charging. He marketed it as a live podcast at his school, and only two people showed up.
He did,
right?
Yeah.
Selling T-shirts all day, selling
Yeah, okay. Anyway.
Our next listener rebuttal is from Jimmy Rose. In your last episode, there was some discussion about the commercial availability of two-way mirrors. Given what we know about the Wizarding World, this seems unlikely to me. In Britain, at least, there are two main areas for Wizarding commerce, Diagon Alley and Hogsmeade. If you consider what is for sale, or at least what's mentioned as being for sale in the books, you'll find that most of it has to do with food, joke items, clothing, animals, and broomsticks. We've yet to see the Wizarding World version of the sharper image. In fact, we've got a lot of evidence that there's a lot of call for convenience items. Take, for example, the Rememberal. It lets you know what you've gotten forgotten something, but gives you no help at all in remembering what was forgotten. If that's the best they can do.
This is very poorly read, Ben, I must
personalization. Sorry, people keep walking in here looking at me. I find it hard to believe that you'd walk into a store and find something as useful as a two-way mirror. Anyways, we know what you're saying. We know what Jimmy is saying here.
I agree, but it could be like a special mail order item that you can only get from from twowaymirrors.com.
Yeah.
Something like that. You know, it's like, it could not be a sort of, it could just be like a patented item that only one company sells.
Patented.
Okay, well,
like
patented.
Like Linux.
Linux.
You know what's interesting about the Rememberalls is that they were banned from the OWL tests in Book 5, but that I find that interesting because they aren't actually supposed to tell you what you've forgotten or like according to the movie.
Yeah, you could have forgotten anything.
You're going to know
forgotten to.
Why are Rememberals, you know, I mean, unless it's like, if it's good on a multiple choice answer where you're like, okay, I think it's B, and then it says you've forgotten the truth or something.
Because it's still an aid that, you know,
stops
your thing. But the thing is, this is also about Felix Felicis, that it says, Slughorn says that it's a banned thing in competitions, you know, athletic events, so you can only use it on an ordinary day. But what constitutes an ordinary day? It's like that, you know, which is why I don't see how Felix Felicis could possibly ever be allowed, really, because who decides if it's an ordinary day? But that's completely gone off on a tangent,
yeah,
so
I think we should
get back to Jimmy Rose.
I like what Jimmy Rose was saying about, you know, convenience items, and also how the wizards want to impress each other with different gifts and things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think that's cool. But obviously a lot of that is also misuse of Muggle artifacts, like the Fort Anglia, so, you know.
But he points out that wizards like to change ordinary items, like, you know, using unheard-of magical spells, that kind of thing, you know, to change them for their own good, like the Marauder's Map. You know, that it's clearly taken a strong bit of individual personalized magic to make it how it is. And, like, so the two-way mirrors, I think they've just bought two mirrors, you know.
And enchanted them.
The mirror shop in Hogsmeade,
well,
enchanted them.
And I think there are several other rules that they could work with if they wanted to do that, such as the rule of seven, which seems to be present, at least, you know, to Voldemort and Horcruxes. Seven's a magical number. And also the rule of pairs, as described by Dumbledore. Yeah.
Can we just talk about it? Jimmy mentions that the phone box, the phone booth outside of St. Mungo's.
Yeah, that's...
Purgendale's.
We should have been leaky that question.
It's the Ministry of Magic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the Ministry of Magic. The phone booth.
It seems... Yeah, this is completely off on a tangent again, but I was just thinking, it seems a bit weird that they choose that thing to get into the Ministry, because one person's number in the real world has got to end in magic, or start in magic.
Yeah, but they're only... Does that phone really work?
I would be scared if I was sitting there. You know, I was standing in there, and I dialed my friend's number, and the phone booth went down into the earth. I think.
Yeah, but it's just magic. And in the book, it's described that nobody would ever approach it because it's so
there's like
worn
shattered
down
panes of glass.
Yeah,
What
do you mean you've got to dial out?
Well, sometimes you have to enter
Dial magic and stop, then it'll...
Somebody who's read the Harry Potter books will probably go there now.
That's like saying somebody would have to be able to stumble. I'm saying that that's like saying someone had to be able to stumble upon Hogwarts. It could have the same anti-Muggle charms.
It could. But there must be some easier way though of doing it. Yeah, I mean it probably does, but still,
of course, there's probably an easier way. But that's the way it is.
Deal with it.
Let's just deal with everything. Every single show should just be, "Hi, welcome to MuggleCast. Deal with it."
And that was hilarious. That was a real knee slapper, Jamie.
Yeah, I'm on the floor. I'm in tears.
Well, at least I don't think that Sirius. This is getting at you, Eric, but I don't mean it to only get at you. It's getting at all of you in general because your jokes are so obvious. Hey, guys, and he was like, "Dude, what's happening here, man?" That's the kind of jokes
that was
not
a joke.
Obvious
that
stuff.
Was a joke.
I don't care. You're gonna take.
All right. Anyway,
that was inflection. That was
just because you
I
don't understand the nuances and subtleties of the British humor. You know,
it wasn't even funny though. Humor means it's funny.
Okay, Ben.
Our next rebuttal comes from Stacy24 from Washington. Once again about the 2A mirror. I recently read Order of the Phoenix, and something about the mirror struck me, and I have not been able to get it out of my mind. In Chapter 29 of Order of the Phoenix, Fred and George create a diversion so that Harry can use Umbridge's fireplace undetected to contact Sirius and ask him about the Snape's Wars memory. Why, oh why, didn't Sirius tell Harry to use the mirror instead of going to all that trouble? Perhaps he didn't want Lupin to know he'd given a 2-way mirror to Harry, but I think the situation was important enough for Sirius to encourage Harry to use the mirror. But I suppose if Sirius had told Harry, the rest of the book may not have happened.
Yeah, I think this is something where you're reading a little bit too much into it. I just reread this scene about 2 days ago, and it was Sirius. It was one of those things where Sirius just didn't think about it. He was, you know, Harry was in the fire, and whereas Sirius would say, "What are you doing here? You're risking your neck. Why didn't you use the mirror?" Where that could have happened, he was basically just, you know, excited to have any contact with Harry. Remember, the kind of person Sirius is, he was very excited, but also, you know, very worried, and he just wanted to hear what Harry had to say so that he could get him, you know, off on his way.
And remember, hindsight is 20/20. I mean, it could have just been an oversight, And Harry, when Harry had it, he buried it at the bottom of his trunk, so he didn't want to communicate with Sirius because he was worried he was going to get him in trouble or whatever, so he decided not to. When you're not in that situation, it's different.
And Lupin had to run and get Sirius too. Harry came through, saw Lupin. Lupin just had to run up while Sirius was feeding Buckbeak, you know, out of the blue. It's just one of those things that slips your mind. The fact is, Harry is in the fire, needs to talk to you. You know, do you say, "Why didn't you use this as much safer?" It was just slipped his mind.
Ben, if I make a joke about something about the mirror struck me, and I have not been able to get it out of my head, if I say, "Oh, it's a shard of glass" or something like that, are you going to be like, "Oh, dude, that's not funny, man"?
No, I'll
if it's not funny,
If it's not funny, it's not funny. Sorry, Jamie. Sorry, you're well, hey, this is MuggleCast.
I've kind of spoiled
deal
it now.
With it,
by,
man.
I've kind of spoiled it.
Jamie, yes, you're British. Yes, you're magical. But if your joke is not funny, we will not laugh.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay, well, I've kind of spoiled it now by asking you if you'd find it funny. So let's move on.
This is a very dry humor podcast. All right, well, Ben has to get out of here because for some reason he podcasts
in school now. He has to get out
now.
Because, no,
he's
you see the...
kicked out of school for podcasting.
No. The personal libraries are normally 24 hours, but they're doing some refurbishments.
Adding in like a hot dog machine, a slushy.
Yeah, precisely, yeah.
Okay.
A free recording studio as well, so the sound quality of the next MuggleCast is going to be amazing.
Laura and Micah are going to join us a little bit later in the show, but for now, we do have a main discussion. Well, just a discussion for everyone week.
I think just a discussion's a bit mean. It's sort of a meh discussion, you know.
It's
it
a what?
Doesn't have the N
it's
on
a
it.
Meh?
It's
a
meh discussion.
Okay.
Yeah. It's almost a main discussion, but it's just slightly lacking, you know?
Yeah.
Slightly lacking, yeah. This week, we are going to discuss the difference in power and magical ability between Voldemort and Dumbledore and every other wizard, witch, and everything. So we're going to start with a small intro and then go on to ask a few questions that we're going to discuss. So,
okay.
Throughout the series, there have been constant reminders of the difference in power between Voldemort and Dumbledore and other witches and wizards. Reference is often made to the incredible powers Voldemort has at his disposal, such as Peter Pettigrew saying there are powers the Dark Wizard possesses, you know, the Dark Lord possesses, stuff like that. And also that Dumbledore is the only wizard that Voldemort has ever feared. Judging by Dumbledore's easy defeat of the Death Eaters at the Ministry of Magic, e.g. him casting that rope thing that binds them all together, and his difficult and deadly battle with Voldemort, are we safe to assume that these two wizards are on a par, or close to a par, on ability, whereas they are miles and miles ahead of other witches and wizards? And that is the intro, and our first question, which kind of, isn't really answer the main discussion, but it kind of stems from it. Is magical ability, does it stem from people's knowledge, like in Star Wars, as in your knowledge of the Force? So Yoda is, you know, sort of the best because he's so old and he's studied the Force, so he knows its nuances and its subtleties, and he can use that to a greater ability.
I think that certainly stands for Dumbledore because of his age, but the last sentence in your opening, though, wasn't that a question? Are we safe to assume that these two wizards...
Yes, it was. It was, yeah.
Because I would say yes.
We can talk about that.
Dumbledore is the most... What's the wording? Powerful wizard? Most powerful wizard alive?
Yeah,
I've just heard it described that Voldemort was actually the most powerful. In fact, by Dumbledore, I think himself, towards the end, he said that Voldemort... And, you know, again, this is kind of a question that, you know, in the beginning of the first book, McGonagall and Dumbledore are sitting on the ledge, and McGonagall says...
K-I-S-S-I-N-G?
Well, that's in the tree later on. but the... could they actually bewitch the Whomping Willow to sit in it? I don't know, anyway. You know what? Maybe the Whomping Willow is just tired of being used by Dumbledore and McGonagall. But anyway,
I think it is. It's just they spend so much time up there. I can't watch this anymore.
It got its name, the Whomping Willow, because Dumbledore was whomping McGonagall.
Even though it would be really funny. But so, you know, she says that you're too noble to use some powers, and you know he blushes, of course, but. In Book 5, Dumbledore actually does say, and I think it's okay to, you know, for him to admit that Voldemort is, he said specifically not powerful, but his extensive knowledge of magic covers more than any other wizard, including myself. And I think it's safe to say that Voldemort would at least know more different kinds of Dumbledore. But again, Dumbledore holds his own, and Dumbledore was he was able to detect the whole cut your wrist open the door, use the thing across the lake, you know. He was able to detect the magic, so they're very obviously close in power.
Yeah, no, I agree, but I just think that it's funny, well, not really funny, but how at the Ministry of Magic, Dumbledore just walked in, cast one spell, and all of the Death Eaters just didn't have a chance. And with Bellatrix as well, who's clearly pretty, you know, powerful magically, he just bewitched the Fountain of magical brethren, and the thing just came after her, and she fired spells uselessly off its chest. You know, it's like he just seems that he can do absolutely anything
so easily
against anyone.
Well, he could.
Yeah, so easily. But whereas it's just against Voldemort that he has trouble. That battle in the Ministry, I doubt any other wizard could have, you know, stood up to that amount of magical power being transferred. You know,
even Harry
being transferred back and forth. In terms of blow on blow, you know, if Harry had dodged it and, you know, jumped around and used his mind, you know, like he has, then yes, probably. But I can't imagine if they had a sort of, you know, a slapping contest for wizards where you slap the other person in the face and then they slap you and it just keeps happening until you give up. If they did that with wands and, you know, spells, I can't imagine Harry being able to stand up to Voldemort's, or Dumbledore's things, because it doesn't seem like normal spells. They don't only fire stuff. They don't only fire stuff out of their wands. They bewitch and ensnare and cause the water to rise up and do stuff like that. You know, that other people I just don't think can.
No, the whole water thing covering Voldemort, like Voldemort enclosed in this case of like water, and the whole even the fact that Voldemort left his physical body to possess Harry. You know, even the fact that he like just jumped out of his body and into Harry's, and his body disappeared completely from the physical plane. How do you do that?
Exactly,
and that's what makes the battle so cool to see. Sorry, Andrew.
And yet, in the Ministry, he continued to be disregarded as this madman who just had no influence in the Ministry of Magic.
Oh yeah, well,
it's very sad.
That's the question. If Dumbledore ran things, you know, if Dumbledore was Minister of Magic, but he would never want that. He just wanted to teach students.
Yeah,
precisely. You know,
teaching students and governing the already grown-up public are two separate choices, I think, for your life.
But don't you think that going back to sort of Voldemort's power, especially, you know, the auras, are supposed to catch dark wizards. I just don't think you can call Voldemort simply a dark wizard,
because he's a dark lord.
He isn't only a dark wizard. Yeah, exactly. And I just, the auras are, you know, impressive and stuff. But if Dumbledore can curse Dawlish. And I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, thank you.
You just did. You've given enough.
I'm going to say it as quickly as possible. I'm going to say it as quickly as possible. If Dumbledore can curse Dawlish easily with no effort whatsoever, and he's got outstanding in, or you know, sort of every single
exactly
he's ever taken, and along with five other people at the same time, or four, or however many people it was, how can Dawlish have any chance of catching Voldemort? It's just inconceivable.
That's why it is, but that's the thing. It's like they should have used Dumbledore. You know, they should have. Now I bet they're kicking themselves in the butt because Dumbledore was so powerful.
Don't you think also that Book Six, especially, it's Dumbledore's mental and physical decline, I think, is showing that while he could. You know, exchange blow on blow with Voldemort for a while, Voldemort is more powerful than him overall. I think if they in Book Six, if it came down to a duel, Voldemort would win. And I think that's it. It's putting everything on Harry. You know, absolutely everything on Harry.
Yes, but I think that also goes to say that why then is it exactly a bad thing that Dumbledore died anyway? Because if he...
Well, precisely.
He obviously was declining, whether, you know, that was, I guess, power. And if you remember, I mean, age is kind of a factor.
Oh yeah,
it's got to be. I mean, you know, but
it definitely in Book Six it played a role.
You know, and the soul would of course be an advantage Dumbledore had over Voldemort. But you know, Dumbledore told Harry that he only suspected one wizard, or any wizard, or all wizards in general, of only having one Horcrux, which we can kind of infer is Grindelwald, but nobody knows. But he said the most he thinks any wizard had of Horcruxes was one. Obviously, that says. But it's how did Voldemort acquire that knowledge, and you know of how to do that not just once but six times? Maybe he's talked to the guy who did it the first time, but I mean, for the term to even exist, you'd think that enough people would.
So how's your Horcrux?
Yeah,
it's just.
But yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
amen. I concur. But I just it just seems that. the reason for Dumbledore's death was that he couldn't teach Harry anything more. He taught him everything he knew, and since he couldn't take on Voldemort for him, you know, there wasn't, you know, anything left for him apart from to die. And it sounds terrible, apart from for him to die and infuriate Harry even more that he's gonna, you know, go and kick Voldemort's butt, man.
Yeah. Well, he could have told Harry how he kind of, you know, burn his hand off or anything. Okay, so I don't think we're talking exactly about the second part of this as in comparison to other wizards. You know, we've talked about them to each other.
Don't you think that he could, both of them, all of the Death Eaters are scared of Voldemort, so clearly he has weapons that they can't even comprehend. You know, he's just...
Yeah.
It just seems like he has everything that everyone else, you know... I mean, like, even people obviously respect him as well. Like Ollivander said, you know, he did terrible things.
But great.
Sorry, great things, but, you know, terrible, yes, awful, but great things. Because he's so powerful. People respect power, even if it's, you know, terrible power. It's so, and the same with Dumbledore. Everyone respected him. Hogwarts was safe because Dumbledore was there, you know? And if Voldemort feared Dumbledore, you can't disagree with Voldemort, who hates being weak, who hates weakness, who hates being scared of other things. If he personally feared Dumbledore, then what does that say about Dumbledore, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, too. But that's just the thing. Again, that's why it's so fun to watch the battle in Book 5, because Voldemort just comes up with some kind of weird-sounding talisman reverberation thing at Dumbledore. Dumbledore counters it with some kind of other shield of unknown presence that makes a
shield
gong.
Shield of glory.
Yeah, well, it was a gong sound. Remember that? It was like a shield.
That was Voldemort's shield. That was Voldemort's shield.
Yes, but that was amazing. It was like a strange gong humming as, you know, in response to Dumbledore's...
Yeah. But then it's just... What spell did he cast then? If he didn't seek to kill him there after,
I know,
Voldemort,
isn't that
could
the coolest question
that?
In the world? Because Voldemort immediately said after he reflected that spell, "You wish not to kill me, Dumbledore."
Yeah,
and of course they got into there. You know, you do not know that, you know, there are worse things than death and stuff like that. But Voldemort knew exactly. He must have known exactly what that spell was going to do to him, even though Dumbledore didn't open his mouth.
I just can't think what kind of. What kind of spell that could possibly have been?
And how do you acquire that knowledge of what the, you know? If the gong sounds, it means charm. You know, it was this spell. But it's just unbelievable.
He can clearly sort of read, you know, read music by ear. So you know, each spell makes a different sound, and then he just hears it, and you know, knows.
What do you guys think of Dumbledore as a legilimens? Because there was a question in Book 5 about Dumbledore teaching him himself. Like, it was tossed around, except for obviously the fact that, you know, Harry would, upon looking at Dumbledore, explode into flames. But you know, he said, you know, I didn't teach him myself because I didn't want to reveal anything to Voldemort and stuff. But Dumbledore's a legilimens seems kind of cool. And
he's clearly amazing, though, because he's amazing at everything.
He's amazing at everything. I think he got what? He got perfect scores in Transfiguration and Charms or something.
Yeah.
He were like perfect newts. Like,
he did stuff with a wand that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That Tofty, right. Tofty said that, yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff with a wand I've never seen before. Things like that. It makes you think like it's not an acquirable knowledge. It makes it seem like it's just.
It's just Dumbledore. It's unreachable. Like apart from.
Like, nobody can just do things with a wand like that. And that was when Dumbledore was at Hogwarts, when he was 17 years old. Here he is 150.
Maybe it's like sort of, you know, polymaths from the Renaissance period. It's like the wizarding equivalent. They're like, they're just once in a while a wizard who comes along who excels in absolutely everything and is ridiculously powerful magically. Like, I bet the four founders of Hogwarts were miles ahead of other
That's
wizards.
That's the other
witches,
thing.
Oh, yeah.
Bring
in
up.
Their age. It just seems like that.
Well, Voldemort having Slytherin's blood in him. The pureblood thing is supposed to, you know, be, you know, inbreeding is supposed on the whole is supposed to affect genetics and things like that, make people, you know, more maniacal and evil and stuff like that. But, you know, the power at least or the richness. I mean, if we're to think Dumbledore is any kind of descendant of Gryffindor or something else, you know, that could have a play in it too. So maybe blood does matter in like the slightest of ways where you may be a little bit more susceptible to things. But you know, were the four founders all pure blood though? I mean, Do we know that?
No.
But it's kind of implied with the whole Slytherin connection that at least, well, Slytherin must have been pure blood. But, like, where does that... I don't know where that starts.
But then, in relation to other witches and wizards, do you think that they are?
They are what?
Miles ahead of them. They could beat anyone.
The heads of houses are miles ahead?
No. Voldemort and Dumbledore. Do you think that... it's like a chess masters. You know, they can beat every single chess player in a club, or then chess grandmasters can beat every single chess master and stuff like that. You know, it's like, I just think that they're absolutely ahead of everyone. And in Duels, they, you know...
I don't know about light years. What do you mean exactly? Just ahead in knowledge or skill? Because isn't the knowledge that they have everything common?
No, but I mean... If Dumbledore and Voldemort had like a... if there was like a competition... where every single person duelled, and it was like a knockout thing. So if you lost, you went home, you know. I think Voldemort and Dumbledore would be facing each other in the final battle.
Oh, yeah.
However many people, you know, came in. So it's just like...
I definitely agree, skill-wise, but I don't know about knowledge, because it seems like it would be... Like Horcruxes, for example.
They're not common knowledge.
No, but Voldemort didn't want that memory to learn about Horcruxes. He wanted it to learn about what Slughorn told Voldemort about Horcruxes. There's a difference. You know, it isn't though he didn't know about Horcruxes. And like in the first chapter of Book 6, when Fudge says that... the Muggle Prime Minister asks, is he back? And Fudge says... I don't know, and Dumbledore won't explain it properly. It's like Dumbledore is the only person who understands it. And it just seems like, you know, in terms of power, in terms of knowledge, that he's ahead of everyone.
There was something else he said, too. I think he was explaining to Harry, it's at the end of Book 5, after Sirius's death, in his office. He explains to Harry, he says that the enchantment placed on Privet Drive is... of an ancient magic that obviously Voldemort underestimates or hates and therefore underestimates, but he also says that I think that I found a connection or a way to protect you that maybe no other wizard has. Or he said something along the lines of where I'm the only one who really knows how to do this particular kind of thing, so I did because I invest faith in my own intelligence.
Also, I assume we should... assume that the two Fidelius charms... Sorry, not the two. The Fidelius charm that was used with the Secret Keeper was performed by Dumbledore. Because Flitwick says in Prisoner of Azkaban that it's an immensely complex spell. And I think when he says it's an immensely complex spell, it's sort of... It really is immensely complex. It's not just like, you know, brewing a draft of living death, which is... damn hard, but not impossible. It really is only, you know, some of the most difficult things in the world.
Yeah.
And
I bet Dumbledore can't do that.
One questions, you know, what it entails. Obviously, it's a little bit more of a swish and flick. It's even more than, a Patronus thinking of a happy thought.
This is the thing. I think it's like a million times
more
than
that.
What
other ways are, you know, what could you possibly, you know, do you need to empty your mind? Do you need to be in a certain state of meditation when you create things like
that? Ask Dumbledore.
Ask Dumbledore. I can't.
Oh, wait, he's dead. I think we've, you know, pretty much agreed that Dumbledore and Voldemort are ridiculously, ridiculously powerful. Voldemort is ridiculously, ridiculously powerful, and Dumbledore was ridiculously, ridiculously powerful. And that they could, beat any person in a duel, and that people look up to them and respect them and admire them. Even Voldemort.
I didn't want to interrupt you.
Go on, then. I thought we were wrapping
this
up. Yeah, but a final thought, if I may. One of the things I think about Dumbledore, too, is potentially the reason he might know, you know, as much is because, well, A, he seeks it, but things like, I just thought of the scene by the lake with the merpeople when Dumbledore was speaking Mirmish. I'm not saying there aren't institutions that may teach you Mirmish, but Dumbledore's the kind of person like that who would care and who would seek to... communicate with the residents of, obviously, the lake where his school is.
So it's diplomacy as well as...
I think good diplomacy,
you know,
is...
magical ability. Eric, I'm going to put you on the spot here and ask you a question, quite a difficult one. What is the name of the leader of the mermaids and, sorry, the merpeople in the lake?
I do not know.
Andrew,
wait,
do you know?
Wait.
No Googling it, Eric.
No, I'm not Googling
naughty,
it.
Naughty, naughty, naughty boy.
You would hear my naughty, naughty, naughty fingers typing the naughty, naughty, naughty keys.
Okay. Good then, that's fine. Shall I tell you?
I know it's got some kind of what's that called? Like
word in it?
The CHGH type sounds. What are they? CHCK.
Gutches?
Itches? Not chiz, but also SH. The actual.
I'll tell you. Shall I tell you? It's a Murph. Sorry, Merchieftainus Mercus.
Is that actually in the book?
It is.
What page?
I don't know.
Ooh, pwn. All right.
It's time now for another installment of the Crackpot Theory of the Week. We've gotten lots of...
Sorry,
I like that music.
I like that
Someone
too.
Make a remix out of that.
It's kind of Layla. It's kind of... Layla by Clapton. It's not actually at all. I've just decided.
I just pretended like I knew, so...
It's Lay. It's L-E-Y. There's no la on this one, though.
Oh, okay. I guess that's it. Go ahead. Go for it, Jamie.
Okay. This is from Scott16 from Australia. And, Eric, this is your Crackpot Theory of the Week. The final Horcrux is Voldemort's wand. Go.
Okay.
Go.
Where is Voldemort's wand? Where has it been? How did he get it back? There is only one explanation for this, and... this is it. Voldemort's wand is actually a Horcrux. He preserved himself inside it, and it has the ability to skitter across the floors and through the pages of all seven books, or rather, all the first four or five books. And that is how Voldemort retrieved it. Nobody was able to find it because, well, the Voldemort inside of it just moved the wand slightly away from everybody, so that once he was destroyed, it was not buried amongst the rubble. And throughout time, it was just seen in the corners of the HP universe, just browsing and viewing what was going on, so that by the time that Voldemort regained control of his wand, it would then be able to supply him with the knowledge and experience of... I don't know. Maybe it's hanging out with Trevor in the Chamber of Secrets. I really don't know.
But okay. Not bad, Eric. It's getting better.
Still tweaking some things. Could we possibly do another one? I know it's a little bit much to ask, but...
Yes.
I love these so much, and so many people... You know, I got 10 or 20.
So this is so many people. It's not my fault, it saves.
What?
What do you think of that one?
I immediately think of a point that is of... One sec, I'll type it to you.
Okay. Let me read the points that Scott brought up. Voldemort, who values his magical prowess above all else, would consider his wand almost part of him, a sensible place to keep a part of his soul, as he will always have it with him. Another point, his wand managed to survive the explosion that wrecked Godric's Hollow. Normal wood would have been burned to cinders. This could mean his wand is protected. And the final point, wizards are very attached to their wands. Cedric polished his regularly. Harry says he is very fond of his wand, and that it can't help being related to Voldemort via its core. His wand connects him to the magical world, the locket, the diary, and the ring connect him to Slytherin, etc.
I had not thought about the wand connecting him to the wizarding world. I think that's cool.
Eric, you ready for your next one? Okay, this one is from Alex15 from Indiana. And Eric, this is your Crackpot Theory of the Week. Rufus.
I'm sorry. It's ruined.
It's fine. No, it's fine. We'll do it again.
Okay.
And got me on my knees, and Crackpot.
Eric, this is your Crackpot Theory of the Week. Rufus Scrimgeour, the new Minister of Magic is a descendant of Godric Gryffindor and will play a key role in Book 7.
Ah, the lion. He's described as being...
We need millionaire music for this.
Don't.
You know, Regis...
You're giving him time to think.
Regis is Regis is no longer doing that.
Stalling show. Minus
I'm
five.
I'm not stalling. Yeah. Okay. His lion face. Isn't he described as having a face like a lion? I mean, come on.
By who?
Oh.
Who said that? Come on, Eric. First chapter of Half-Blood Prince. Come on.
Half-Blood Prince? Well, it was...
Come on, boy. Come on. You're useless. You're a disgrace. You fail at life. Kill yourself.
Harry?
Is Harry in the first chapter of Half-Blood Prince, Eric? You call yourself a fan.
The other minister.
Yes. Who is it?
Oh, well,
Tony Blair.
It's not Tony Blair. Because
he's quitting. Who cares?
According to the lexicon, yeah. He's quitting?
He is.
Well,
he will be soon.
So the other minister thinks he has a face like a lion. Come on. He's a descendant of Godric Gryffindor. That's all there is to it. In fact, he might be Godric Gryffindor. In fact, I might even...
Repetition, minus 15.
No, in fact, is not repetition. In fact, he might even be Aslan from the Narnia series. You never know. Anything is possible. But a guy with a lion of a face...
Non-relevance, minus 20.
I don't think it's a question. He has got a lion fur face, and he goes around like and he governs people, and he governs the magical world, and he realizes what an asset Harry is.
That was good.
Okay. Well, what were there any other points that he brought up? She brought up. He.
No, she didn't bring it at you.
All right. Well, if you got a crackpot theory of the week for Eric that you want him to answer on the show, send it into mugglecast@saf.mugglenet.com. It has to be. He has to be able to prove it in some way, shape, or form. Send in your points so we can read them on the show once he's done. You know the drill. You know how it rolls. So,
oh my gosh, can both of those actually go in? I thought that was really.
Eric.
Thank you. I really like that.
We're now going to head into an editorial segment, hosted by Laura and Micah. Eric, this is, and then Eric, you're getting out of here. And you'll be gone for 3 weeks? 4 weeks?
Well, I can be on the show if it's absolutely necessary. You know, if you're short of people, if you only have just you and Ben one night, you know, I can do it. It won't be that. It'll be like 11 a.m. on a Thursday, which, you know, we'll be doing nothing except sleeping. So, you know, I can be. But it's, you know, I don't need to be. And I don't need to be on. But, I'll be gone, 2 weeks, actually, the 24th. And then, obviously, the 24th, I'm meeting up with you guys. So we'll be together with the live podcast and everything else. Hope the rest of the episode goes well tonight. And I will...
All right, Eric.
Okay.
Have fun in
New Zealand.
Thank you.
Yep.
And we'll take it right now to a editorial segment by Laura and Micah. Take it away, girls and Micah. No, just girls.
Just girl and Micah.
Hey, everyone. The editorial segment is back. Yay! Say yay, everyone. Come on. Yay.
Yay.
I love the enthusiasm. Okay. And to celebrate joining us, joining Micah Tan, the Anchorman, as I like to call him, and I this week, is Brandon Ford, author of The Underground Lake. Welcome back, Brandon.
Hello, thank you for having me back.
Oh, it's no problem. We had a great time with you the first time, and you were actually the first editorialist we had on this segment, right?
Yes, I feel very honored.
The Underground Lake has been on hiatus for a while now, but it's back, great as ever. So, Brandon, why don't you give us a little bit of a synopsis on your latest piece?
My last editorial was called Where in the World is Wormtail? Basically, after reading Book 6, I was very frustrated because I predicted after reading Book 5 that Wormtail was up to something, which is why he was gone the whole book. And in Book 6, he still really didn't do anything. He was just sort of living with Snape in what I called the New Millennium Odd Couple, which was very strange to me. And he didn't really do anything but serve wine and eavesdrop on people. So I was trying to still think, what could he possibly still be up to? So that was sort of my little introduction back into the world of editorial writing regularly once again.
So now, according to your editorial, who is it that Voldemort doesn't trust? Snape, Wormtail, or both?
Both. But I think right now he's kind of playing both sides against the middle, that essentially they're living with each other because one is supposed to be spying on the other one. But I think ultimately the real choice of Voldemort is that Wormtail is living there to spy on Snape to make sure he really is playing for the right team.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting because this came up on an episode of MuggleCast. We were talking about this, and most people would assume that Snape is keeping an eye on Wormtail because that's in fact what he says in the book, but I think when you think about it, it makes a lot more sense for Wormtail to be spying on Snape.
Yeah, I definitely agreed with that, and which is why it came out of trying to figure out what in the world Wormtail was doing living with Snape. And to me, that just makes the most sense.
So we know that Wormtail is obviously a drifter, kind of seeking the stronger side of the war. Do you think Snape is like this too? Or do you think that he actually has an alliance? Do you think he's actually playing the role of spy? Or do you think he's playing both sides to his own advantage?
For the longest time, I thought he was what I called a triple agent, which was he was just out for himself. He was really playing both sides. But I don't really want to answer that question because my next editorial is actually the answer to that question.
Ah.
So I'm going to just leave you with that. But I do think he does have something rather secretive up his sleeve.
But I guess going off of that, your editorial, you sort of started out taking a look at where Wormtail was, but then you didn't really answer it. Is that going to come up in the next editorial too?
No. When I titled it "Where in the World is Wormtail," at first it was, I mean, obviously geographically we know where he is. He's living in Snape's old house, but I think more what I meant was, what has he been up to since book four, really? And I guess one of the reasons that I didn't really go as much into what I thought he was doing is because a lot of the wind was knocked out of my sails after reading book six, because essentially J.K. Rowling answered the question that he's been living with Snape. And I wasn't really satisfied with that. So I really wanted to go more into what the fact that it has more to do with Snape and less to do with Wormtail right now. However, I do still hope that there's something going on with him, that there is some secret plan that only he and Voldemort know about, but I'm not going to hold my breath for that one.
Now, do you think Wormtail is planning to help Harry in any way? You know, will he help him at all? And if he does...
Yeah, I had been thinking about that because, of course, what Dumbledore said about how Wormtail now owes Harry, because Harry didn't let Lupin and Sirius kill him. And I thought, like a lot of people did, that it would come down to the end and that he would sacrifice himself for Harry. But then for a while I started to think about, you know, the obvious Lord of the Ring parodies where, you know, Gandalf says that, you know, Gollum is gonna, you know, rule the fates of many and all that stuff. But then in the end, it's not a good way that he rules the fates of many. It's actually quite a horrible way that he rules the fates of many. So I started to think maybe it's possible that Wormtail, in his greed or in his evil, would do something and that would lead to a chain of events where it would end up helping Harry, even though he isn't purposely helping Harry per se. But in the end, I feel like, knowing J.K. Rowling, he'll probably do something in the end that will help Harry.
Earlier you were talking a little bit about how book six took some of the wind out of your sails. Did Joe's reading in New York City interfere with any of your theories?
Actually, no. When I was asked to come back, I went on MuggleNet and looked at the transcripts and the reports of what she said in New York City, and really she didn't. In fact, she kind of gave a little more fire to a theory that I had before that I thought she debunked, that now I kind of have again, which was about Petunia and how in book seven, whatever her big secret is going to be revealed. I had, and I think we discussed this the last time I was on, that I had the theory that she was a closet broomstick and that she might have magical powers or something. And J.K. Rowling, in one of her interviews since then, said that she's not a squib and she doesn't have powers and things. But then in the New York chat, she mentions that there is some huge secret that she has that's going to be revealed. And I think one point that I did mention in that article about how she maybe kept the original letter that Dumbledore gave her, or that she has something of Harry's parents', or in the end, ultimately, she really does have a soul and she's just not some evil word that I probably shouldn't say. And I think that it really is going to come down to her being revealed as not such a horrible person after all, hopefully.
So you were very satisfied when she clearly stated that Dumbledore was dead?
Yes, extremely. That was sweet vindication. That was sweet vindication.
I know exactly how you feel.
I have gotten so many emails from people saying Dumbledore's not dead, just like Sirius isn't dead. I even got a few Cedric isn't really dead, which is really stupid. But, you know, I'm just glad that she said categorically Dumbledore's dead, deal with it, people. And it does make me a little happy inside.
Now, what about the whole possibility of redemption? Because that was something else that somebody asked, possibly for Draco, possibly for Snape.
As far as redemption for those two characters, once again, the redemption of Snape goes into my next editorial, and the possible redemption of Draco goes into the one that I'm writing after that.
Okay.
But I can say that my feeling about as far as Snape being redeemed is, my problem is, at the end of the day, regardless of what team he's playing for, he is the one who murdered Dumbledore. And there's sort of no turning back from that. He can't exactly walk up to the Order and say, oh, it was all arranged, it was all a plan, because if he goes to the Order, they're just going to kill him. So I don't know. Whatever he does, he can only be redeemed really in the eyes of Harry. In the eyes of the world, he will always be the man who killed Dumbledore, and no amount of explaining and no amount of intrigue is going to change that fact. So his redemption is going to be on a different level than, oh, he's really good after all, let's all hug and shake hands and call it a day. As for Draco, you know, Harry has more or less, not necessarily forgiven Draco, but acknowledged the fact that he doesn't think that Draco ever would have killed Dumbledore, so he actually pities him, and I'm on that train too. Whether Draco can come back to the side of good, I don't know. He might be motivated for the love of his parents and trying to protect them to ultimately make the right decision, but something else I've always said is that Draco may not have killed Dumbledore, he may not have pulled the trigger, but he bought the gun, loaded it, and cocked it, so there's a level of guilt in there as well. The short answer is I don't know.
Right, and I think when that question was asked, she tended to favor Draco a little bit more when she was talking about redemption. At least that's the impression I got from her answer.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Absolutely.
Yeah, I do think that if any of the two of them is going to be redeemed, my money's on Draco over Snape. Mm-hmm. But time will tell.
Now, the preview for your next article is called What If We're Wrong? And my question is, what if we're wrong about what?
What if we're wrong about Snape actually being a good guy?
Oh, no.
I'm going to sort of give you what I pretty much put in the introduction to it, that, you know, as soon as I read the book the first time, I was immediately on the, oh, I trust him even more now that he killed Dumbledore because he did it because he had to and all this stuff. But after, when I was doing research for Where in the World is Wormtail, I read Spinner's End, and something really did not sit well with me when Snape was giving his answers to all the questions that Bellatrix kept asking him. And it got me thinking, what if everybody's wrong? What if he really isn't good? What if everything he told Bellatrix was the truth? That he did all that stuff because he's on Voldemort's side. And it's just sort of... And the subtitle is A Trip to the Bizarro World, where it's just sort of, what if we look at everything that's happened in the books from the point of view that he was telling the truth and he really is a bad guy? What does that ultimately mean for Harry, and what does that mean for us as readers who have believed him for the past 6 books, and it turns out he really was evil the whole time?
I think that J.K. Rowling has just trained us so well to second-guess everything, so that when we saw Dumbledore actually murdered,
really
we automatically thought, oh, there has to be something else to this. And I'm sure there is, but we may be looking a little bit too far into it. So be interesting to read that.
Some of us thought he was alive, didn't we, Mike?
Yeah, I don't know who. Some site, actually.
Well, that all sounds insanely interesting, and I think that everybody's pretty much really looking forward to reading that one. But we're running out of time, so we need to get into our lightning round, which I don't think you got to do that because we premiered that after your debut on this segment. So first question, did Snape love Lily?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, I'll take the next one. At Radio City Music Hall, did Joe slip up and reveal that the trio will survive the war, or are people reading too much into it?
Well, I believe that Ron and Hermione will be surviving. I've always been in the I think Harry's going to die group, but I don't think she slipped up and revealed that. I think she did slip up and reveal that that Ron and Hermione were probably going to survive because I think they are.
Who else was at Godric's Hollow the night the Potters were killed?
I always maintain that I think Peter Pettigrew was there with Voldemort in the house.
That's your whole lost state theory, isn't it?
Yes, it is. No, fudge was not there. I concede that actually did not happen now that I've read book six. But I think he was there.
And in that Richard and Judy interview, she said that she spared one recently when she was writing book seven. Who do you think that was?
You're getting into an editorial that I've just started writing too. Who do I think is spared is Lupin.
Really? Why is that?
Well, I always had down that I thought all of the Marauders had to die, just because I think that piece of Harry Potter history had to be closed, because I believe Wormtail is going to die, and I believe that Lupin has to die so that all four of them can, and that basically the whole set has to die. But now, after book six and Lupin's hopeful relationship with Tonks and other things, I kind of think he might be the one who's spared.
And who do you think are the two people that are going to die in the in place of the character who got the reprieve?
I've been thinking about that one a lot lately, and I'm not entirely sure about one. I think, unfortunately, Hagrid probably has to go.
Oh.
I don't want him to go, but I think he's got to go. Just because that would be really sad, and that would kill everybody. But I don't know about the other one. I've been really trying to think about who the other person could be.
See, when
I'm hoping it's not Neville, but it could be.
When I heard two, I immediately thought Fred and George.
I don't think so.
No,
I think I'm going to say all the Weasleys are safe. I really feel like all the Weasleys are safe.
Really?
That's
interesting. A lot of people think that Percy's going to buy the farm.
I don't think Percy... I honestly don't think Percy's important enough to die. I don't really think anybody would care if Percy dies, personally. But, plus, I think Percy still has to mend his fences with his family. And, you know, I'm an optimist. I think all the Weasleys will remain unscathed. Maybe a little grievously injured, but I think they'll all live.
An optimist who thinks Harry's gonna die.
I think he's got to. I think he has to.
Alright, well, we're running a little short on time here, so Brandon, thank you for joining us again. It is always
anytime.
A pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Listeners, don't forget, if you or someone you know has an excellent editorial on MuggleNet, be sure to let us know. And for one final note, we're working on expanding this segment by featuring other areas of the site and the lovely people who run them, so we will of course be looking for listener feedback on that, because we love you guys so much. So please write in when you hear anything on that. And once again, Brandon Ford, The Underground Lake, read it or else.
Thank you. Please do.
All right. Bye, thanks. Everyone.
Bye. Thank you.
Okay. We're back and now joined by Micah. He hopped off the editorial discussion and decided to join us.
I'm home now.
Oh.
Where were you before?
I was at school.
Ben, in school.
Ben, don't you get a free house with that library as well?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. The editorial segment, or wait, when you got off like 20 minutes ago, so what did you do, fly home?
I drove.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, We have a new segment this week because we're all about new segments, like pickle.
We like to keep up to date, don't we?
Yeah. So it's a new segment, and it's called "What's Bugging Micah?"
Did you practice that?
This is a rough start. Yes, actually.
Can I do it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Why are all of you who hear Micah doing the news think that he's a sort of laid-back, calm individual who doesn't ever get angry or doesn't ever shout or get annoyed? He isn't really. And if you listen to us recording, you'd hear the full force of Micah exploding.
Gives me chills just thinking about it.
It fills us with fear. Yeah, it does. Just thinking about it, I'm going queasy and sort of, you know, jumping up and down. But anyway, we thought that we would bring this this sort of anger and use it productively. So we thought we'd try and show everyone exactly how Micah feels in this new segment.
Right.
So Micah, explode.
All right. Well, being that this is the first segment, I'm going to make it short and sweet. But you'll be able to figure out what it's about soon enough. So with that said, Joe, you need to update your site.
Oh.
Why, you ask? Because it's been 120 days, which is roughly one-third of the calendar year since you last posted something. Wizard of the Month, birthday announcements, they don't count. Yes, I realize you did come visit us in New York City, and it was great seeing you. We know you're writing Book 7, but we're not asking for a lot. Ooh. At least update the diary on the main page. I believe you're supposed to write in a diary more than once every 5 months. I mean, Emerson has posted more than you lately, and that's saying something.
Oh my gosh.
Just to put it in perspective, here are some things that were happening on May 10th, the last time you updated. MuggleCast was only 38 episodes old. We were more than 2 months away from Las Vegas and New York City. Katie Couric was still the host of the Today Show. Those students who are now freshmen in college were still taking classes as seniors in high school. Pluto was still a planet. And DumbledoresNotDead.com was actually a meaningful website. So please, Joe, update your site.
That's what's bugging Micah. Although, Joe...
Well, I could totally see Joe posting a website... Like, because Micah Tannenbaum said that. How awesome would
although,
that be?
Although, Ben, I'd just like to point out that, Joe, if you're listening, we are in no way affiliated with Micah Tannenbaum at all.
Yeah. Or any of his new segments.
Yeah. Or any of his feelings or angers at all. Personally, I think May is a great time to update, and I think you should, you know, live your life, and don't worry about a website, seriously.
Yeah.
Micah, you... Oh, God.
Micah, that was very good. And, you know... We like seeing this side of you, because everyone, you know, sees the serious Micah Tannenbaum in the MuggleCast News Center, but there's never the real Micah. Anyway, good work, Micah. I concur, though. It has been a while. It's a shame. That's all.
What's been a while?
An update to her site.
Duh.
Yeah, it's been... Let's phrase it properly. It would be rather pleasant to receive an update.
Yeah.
But we in no way expect it.
I do.
Okay, I do too. So, update your website. Come on, man. It's been ages.
Yeah. Now it's time for some more fun with Dumbledore Norris Facts. Yay!
Should we have a bad quote of the week as well? Like, you know, the worst one that's been sent in?
Sure.
Okay, I just need to find... This is a nice one from Dan12. Dumbledore's beard makes unicorn hair look dull. When Dumbledore's eyes twinkle brightly behind his spectacles, you had better be glad that he's wearing his glasses. Otherwise, the brightness of that twinkle would burn a hole right through you. I love these. No, actually, even though Ben's boring and says that they are bad, the response that I've got about these has been fantastic, so please keep sending them in.
You know, when I first saw that in the Rightly, and I'm being serious, I thought that you were going to start talking about some relationship between Dumbledore and Mrs. Norris.
Azkaban has recently replaced the Dementors with cardboard cutouts of Dumbledore. It's a more effective way of guarding the prison. And this is a good one. In the seventh year of Hogwarts, Dumbledore was voted best dressed and most likely to be forgiven for performing an unforgivable curse. Nice. Non-magic one of the week. Dumbledore doesn't need an iPod or any other device for playing music. He just thinks of a song he feels like listening to and it immediately starts playing in his head.
Speaking of beautiful and intelligent...
Can I get to say this at some point?
Yeah, Laura just entered. I wanted to introduce her properly. Hello.
Hey, Laura.
Hi.
Laura, did you know that Dumbledore is not really dead, but living with Tupac and Elvis?
Really?
Tupac.
Yeah. Tupac. What's his name?
Tupac, that's it.
Well, I've never heard of this Tupac.
When Dumbledore holds a remembrall, it simply shatters because Dumbledore never forgets. That's from Jennifer Raider, 18, from Texas. Thank you. Please keep sending them in. They're fantastic. Send them to jamie@staff.mugglenet.com. And, yeah. And we especially like original Dumbledore quotes that have, you know, some kind of magic thing related to them. So, to all the people who have gone on chucknorrisfacts.com, copied them down and changed the name to Dumbledore, which I admit I did do first of all, you know, try and get some original ones. But they're all fantastic. Thank you.
Now, it is time for the return of Gimme.
Yay!
Ben Shane.
That's what everyone's been waiting for, I'm pretty sure.
Do you know what?
Yeah, we've been waiting like... when was the last...
4 years. We should live with me a Butterbeer. Andrew,
May?
Andrew.
Yeah, we should do it. Around. Yeah.
When was the last time Joe updated her site?
Oh!
We should do a Give Me a Butterbeer about Ben not doing a Give Me a Butterbeer.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, I'll be right back, but Ben, you can do that.
This week, I'd like to take a look at Harry Potter, the Satanic Art. Behind Harry Potter hides the signature of the King of Darkness, the Devil, Pope Benedict XVI, senior exorcist, told Vatican Radio, and according to the Daily Mail newspaper in London, he added that the book's attempts to make a false distinction between black and white magic, when in fact the distinction does not exist, because magic is always a turn to the devil. I know we've discussed this before, but for the last time, Harry Potter is not turning our youth into little witches and wizards. It's a fictional story about a boy who happens to be a wizard and is attempting to save the world. It's the equivalent of saying Superman must be demon-possessed because real people can't fly. What I'm getting sick and tired of is continually hearing the critics say the same thing over and over. To me, it seems they can't stand how insanely popular the book is, so they're going to be cynical and find a way to criticize. Unfortunately, they keep rehashing the same message. Harry Potter is the devil. I think this is a very important conversation to have. When prominent religious figures continually condemn the books, it makes the average Christian Harry Potter fan feel guilty for reading the series because of its alleged connections with the occult. Please, if you're going to criticize the books, at least make a legitimate attempt to understand what they are about. I sincerely doubt the Pope's exorcist has actually read the series, so it is unfair for him to pass judgment. Perhaps if he actually cracked one of the books, he'd see its underlying moral teachings and realize that it's not just a bunch of teenage witches and wizards dancing in a circle chanting voodoo. Hopefully this is the last time I have to bring this topic up. I'm Ben Shane, and I say, give me a butterbeer.
Well, I doubt it's going to be a...
Pretty good,
it
Benjamin.
It will probably
well
not be the last time you have to bring that topic up, but you do bring up several good points.
The Pope's going to turn around and say, well, if Ben Shane doesn't want us to say it, yeah. we won't say it. It's fine.
So what do you guys think?
I think you're right. But do you know what? I don't really care, though. It's like, if the Pope's senior exorcist wants to say it's about devils and stuff, then that's fine. He can think we're going to hell for reading it. I'm going to read it still, and I'm sure that every other fan is still going to read it, you know. But I do agree that it can make people feel guilty for reading something that they shouldn't feel guilty about. Do you agree with that sentiment, Laura?
I do agree with that sentiment.
Oh, excellent.
It really irks me how people seem to think that they can go about judging the books without even reading them. It's like that, yeah. Laura Mallory, who lives not too far away from me, who claims that she seems to think that she doesn't need to actually read the books before condemning them because she has 4 children and she doesn't have enough time. Yet she has so much time to sit around appealing to the state, which she is now. I think she's getting another hearing here soon, so I'm probably going to go up there and argue.
Good, do it.
I think it's absolutely ridiculous, and I think Ben, you hit the nail on the head.
Try and refrain yourself from hitting her.
But seriously, what right does she have to go and protest something? I mean, the separation of church and state definitely covers this. You can't say because God said so. These books have to be banned from libraries.
No, but you can say it, can't you?
The interpretation.
There's just no grounding.
Of what God is based upon the person, and the Constitution protects your right to freedom of religion. So it's ridiculous.
Well, I think it's important to remember, and I mean, I'm not meaning this to be insulting in the least way at all, but freedom of religion is also freedom from it, and I think that trying to base a public school system's right to have whatever books they want in the library on one person's religious beliefs is absolutely ridiculous.
And I think all you have to do is look at what took place in the beginning of August in New York City in terms of its impact on literature, with 6,000 people coming out each night to see not just Joe, but two other authors. And I think that that's, you know, a statement to be made. The whole idea of it being a satanic cult, and I really don't like the comparisons that were made, in particular the two that Emerson mentioned in his post, to Hitler and Stalin.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous.
Well, and I mean,
it's just ridiculous.
We're all perfect examples of what good Harry Potter can do. Think about how different our lives would be if it weren't for Harry. I mean, we wouldn't be going on all these great trips. We wouldn't be doing this show. We wouldn't even know each other.
I know. How ridiculous do you think it is? jamie@staff.com. Tell me how ridiculous. Exactly how ridiculous
because
you think it is.
The bottom line is that it's a book. I mean, it's not preaching to you. It's not trying to convert you to a belief system. It's just a story. That's all it is. There are many stories out there that involve witchcraft, but it doesn't mean that they're trying to convert us all into Wiccans.
Yeah.
Wicca, whatever you want to call it.
And kids are reading now. They're not letting their brains rot in front of the televisions as much anymore. That is one thing to be so thankful for. Anything that gets kids reading.
Amen, yeah, I don't know how something that encourages child literacy is going to be spawning from the devil.
You go to hell if you read books, but if you play video games, you're all right. It makes no sense.
Well, once again, if you have an idea for this segment, please email ben@staff.mugglenet.com or go to the mugglecast.com website and select Ben from the contact page. Thanks. Also, give me feedback on this. Tell me what you think.
It's time for Andrew's. me. It's time for Andrew's. Email of the week.
That was easy.
It usually takes a couple tries to get my voice, you know.
Yeah,
in the
groove. You could have tuned it up.
Actually, this isn't an email. This is a MuggleNet comment board of the week entry thing. So we posted about MuggleCast 54, which I incorrectly called 55
good
last
job.
Week. My bad. And, you know, we like reading the comments. We like seeing the feedback. And there's just this one comment, kind of, you know, we get these every once in a while and really grinds my gears. It reads, "I'd just like to mention that I used to watch this." Okay, first of all, you don't watch it, you listen to it. Second sentence, "It was good, no comma, though the discussions," spelled D-E-S, yeah, it's like discussions, "did start to go downhill." All right, your opinion. What actually made me quit watching it, once again, you're not watching, you're listening, was the large amount of spyware that latched itself onto my computer when I was downloading the episodes. Ooh!
Yep, you heard it here.
The computer guy said it was very hard to get rid of, and some of them still remain because they will not detach. We may have to get a new computer. Thanks, MuggleCast. First of all, you're welcome. Second of all, we don't attach any spyware.
No, we don't even know how to do that. How can you attach spyware to an MP3 file?
No,
how can we do that?
Ben, don't lie. I think we should we have a special deal worked out with Dell, whereas we screw up everyone's computer, then they buy a new one from Dell and we get 20% of it.
Enter code MuggleCast.
Pretty awesome, really.
Yeah. Who sent this to you? What was their name?
It was on the comment board, but I just want to point out that, of course, we don't attach anything to the audio files. That's just silly, and we would never try to. We don't even know how. So, and they're just audio files. It's like downloading music. So that's all. Jamie, British joke of the day.
Yes. I've got one.
Oh.
Okay.
That's a joke in itself.
No, no. Oh. Okay. Hey. Right. There's this guy, and he goes skydiving for the first time ever. Okay? After he jumps out of the plane, he counts to 10, as you do, pulls the cord, and absolutely nothing happens. So he's getting a bit worried by now, and he pulls the cord for the auxiliary parachute, but unfortunately, again, the chute doesn't appear at all. And he's falling down, you know, reaching terminal velocity, and he's plummeting towards the earth, and he sees this woman coming up completely the other way, and he shouts to her, "Hey, do you know anything about parachutes?" And she quickly replies, "No, do you know anything about gas stoves?"
That bombed.
Oh, God, that's funny. Okay, Ben,
no, it didn't.
You tell yours.
My joke?
Or do you want me to tell it?
So, guys, why did the ghost of the chicken cross the road?
Why?
To get to the other side.
That's good. That is pretty good, that one, Benjamin.
I love that
joke.
That
is pretty good. I'm very impressed. I'm laughing so much.
He did a little bit ago when I told it to you.
Yeah. That isn't the first time he said it. But we still only laughed minorly when he finished.
Now, to wrap up the show this week, Chicken Soup, Back to School Edition. Da-da-da-da-da. What's the Saved by the Bell music?
Because I'm saved by the bell. It's all right because I'm saved by the bell.
Philip Diffibow. 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 15 of Orange County, California, writes about his back-to-school MuggleCast experience. I just wanted to say I love listening to the show and that you actually helped me in school. Let me explain. I am really out of shape. Okay. And at my school, in my PE class, we have to run a mile every week. I never scored very well. One day, my PE teacher said we could listen to our iPods while we ran the mile. Good idea. I just started to run when I noticed I had clicked on MuggleCast. For once, I was actually laughing while I ran
the mile. I'm sure that helps him run faster.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's a little flawed. But anyway, a little while later, my PE teacher had stopped me. I had run 2 extra laps without noticing it. My teacher decided to give me extra credit, bringing my C to a B in the class. Thank you, MuggleCast. Right. How do you get a C in gym?
Because you can't run
a
mile.
Hey, I know people who've done it. We had our...
P.S., Jamie.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead,
oh no,
sorry.
I was just going to say that our final in gym was we had to run for 30 minutes, and if we didn't do it, we got a C in the class. Yeah.
Okay, do you realize in 30 minutes you can run, like, 4 miles?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's a lot.
That's...
And at the bottom it says, P.S., Jamie, you're my favorite Michael Cass.
Well, hey, this person's definitely off the rocker then.
Do you know what we should do? The most sort of I can't remember the word. What's the word that sort of psychs you up and makes you you know, do something
inspiring,
like run fast?
Pumped
yeah,
you.
Sort of inspiring song is always "Eye of the Tiger" by Survivor. Bum, so we should play that every single week, just to kind of like, you know, inspire people who could be doing things when they're listening to the show. It'll help gym students everywhere.
Well, here's another. I like these kind of not rebuttals, chicken soups. This one comes from Brianna 16 of Virginia Beach, Virginia. And she says, "Hey, MuggleCasters, tomorrow I start my senior year of high school. I've been dreading it all summer, but MuggleCast helped me realize that there was nothing to worry about tonight in the form of a supermarket phenomenon. There I was in the refrigerated section of the supermarket in my MuggleCast shirt." Of course, everyone wears their MuggleCast t-shirts out everywhere. holding a jar of pickles for my lunch. Okay, not sure why she has pickles for lunch, but... I left silently, reminded of the most recent episode, which was hilarious, by the way. Then it happens. Ben, cue it up, please.
Bump, 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 bump.
No, what? No, no.
Come on, Ben.
Got to do it all. City of Blinding Lights came on the speakers of the supermarket. I swear that moment was the culmination of my favorite MuggleCast delusions. I had a pickle jar on my hand, you two in my ears, and the podcasters on my, well, chest. I started to laugh even louder. Now that I think of it, I must have looked so ridiculous as I attempted to sing the ooze while laughing hysterically. Wonderful. With the help of MuggleCast, you two, and pickles, I was able to have one last moment of blissful stupidity before I head off to school tomorrow morning. So thank you guys for being funny and utterly random every week. It made my summer. summer. Pickles.
Hey, I have a
challenge. Love that. I have a little challenge for the listeners.
I do the random challenges.
No, we both do. Hold on. Lately, I've been on this little Elton John kick.
Cut up with him copying me.
And Dumbledore is now dead. J.K. Rowling confirmed it. And so I would like for you to write a parody to Elton John's Candle in the Wind for Albus Dumbledore.
Oh, jeez.
I think that's
dumb. Please do it. When I get a t-shirt.
No. Okay. I just want to close the show off by reminding everyone we now have a low bandwidth version of the show. We've had that for a few weeks, but we also have a feed now, so you can subscribe to it within iTunes. Just go to mungocast.com and there's an iTunes link. This version of the show is much easier for those on dial-up to download the show. It sounds like this is really quality, but not really crummy, but I mean, it's still
grainy.
What am I saying? It's the quality's decreased, but you could still hear it just fine. So go to mugglecast.com. So that wraps up MuggleCast episode 55. If you would like to contact us, you can send P.O. Box parcel mail to
P.O. Box 223, Moundridge, Kansas 67107. Oh, by the way, a minor P.O. Box update. This past week, I received 4 boxes of Lucky Charms for Jamie. Yay.
Whoa!
4 boxes of Lucky
Charms.
Two of them come from Sam and Ashley. I have no idea where they're from, but here's what they say. Jamie, you are awesome and my favorite MuggleCaster. Enough of that.
Hey, Andrew, put that in, but just bleep it out.
The other set of goodies come from Madeline. It says on the front. Madeline Welsh.
That's a nice name.
Madeline Welsh from Orlando, Florida. Hey, Madeline, we might be there around New Year's, so we'll swing by.
You can also call in a voicemail question comment to 1-218-20-MAGIC in the United Kingdom, 020-8144-0677. If in Australia, 02-8003-5668. You can also Skype the username MuggleCast to leave a voicemail question, comment, whatever you want. Just Skype the username MuggleCast. Did I already say that? Keep your message under 30 seconds and no background noise. We also got a feedback form on MuggleCast.com. Don't forget the Frapper map. Add your pictures. I know, I'm confident you're all a good-looking bunch. Vote for us, Podcast Alley, all that good stuff. Once again, I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Elton John.
I'm Skater.
I'm Billy Joel.
And I'm Laura Thompson.
We'll see everyone next week for episode 56.
Uh-oh. There goes the bell. Wait. We're going to the hall.
What's this mean? What?
What?
Where are we going?
The bell just rang.
No, I want to
We're going
sit
to the
here.
Hallway.
No.
No, we're going to the hall.
Okay.
We're going to the hall. I may have to leave after this, guys. I don't know. Moundridge High School.
Hey.
Oh, come on.
Hey, Andrew.
Yeah, I'm recording a podcast right now.
Andrew, Moundridge, Kansas. Andrew, keep that stuff in the show about us arguing about that thing that wasn't funny. The arguing was funnier than the actual thing. okay.
Anyway, so we're going
to Hey, Ryan Flood. You're on MuggleCast. Say hi.
What?
What do you think of Harry Potter?
Harry Potter's awesome.
What is it? We're on MuggleCast. Say hi.
Hey. Stay. Go.
Snape. Yo, MuggleCast.
Yeah.
Live.
Yeah. Say hi, Chad.
You're not.
No, I am right now. Swear to God.
Where's Emerson? Emerson, not what.
Emerson. Oh,
Emerson,
God.
I love you, Emerson.
Look, he just punched him in the face. And,
okay.
Oh my God.
Some of this stuff is not.
But?
Huh? Are they talking to you?
Yeah, right now.
See, Emerson, I love you.
Uncensored.
No, get away. No, you look with your eyes. This is ridiculous.
What? Get some girls on, Ben, because they won't swear.
Huh?
Yeah. Ben.
Yeah.
Get some girls on. They won't swear.
Get that bad boy. A long time ago.
Oh, this guy's British.
Yeah, he's British.
Ben gets a lot of girls.
Ben gets a lot of girls, man.
Gets what?
Ben gets a lot of girls, man. It's insane.
I don't believe that.
Oh, no, no. No. The guy is loaded with chicks.
Yeah.
Girls named Henry, right?
And Henry, yeah.
Patrick.
Patrick.
Well,
this is not good. I'm losing signal.
That's quite a segment. Yeah.
Hey, Wayne's. Anyway. Wayne, you're on MuggleCast. Wayne, you're on MuggleCast. Say hi. Say Harry Potter rules.
Harry Potter is.
Everyone automatically knows what MuggleCast is.
It's school.
It's just that's because Andrew. That's because Andrew boasts about it every single.
Get away.
Sorry, that's because Ben boasts about it every single day. He's like, "So Ben, you coming out tonight? No, I've got to record MuggleCast and do my work on the biggest Harry Potter site in the world."
Yet the Maverick people are under the impression that he spends 5 hours every day recording MuggleCast.
Yeah. We do, don't we? You know, that's no our life.
Absolutely.
5 hours a day.
Yes, the unseen footage is.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
There's like.
Not you.
Yes.
No.
Oh, no. I think I'm going to have to go
find
now.
A girl, man.
Hey, Natalie. Natalie, come here.
What do Kansan girls sound like?
Come on, just say hi.
Hello.
It's so stressful, isn't it, Natalie? Yeah.
Yeah. They're so shy.
Pretty, say hi.
Pretty tough, I must admit.
Say hi, Jamie.
Hi, Jamie.
Hey.
Say hi to me.
That's Eric.
I did. Oh, hi.
Say
Eric.
Hi to me.
Exactly. Hi, Eric.
Hi to you.
Hi. Hi, Natalie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
No, this is Eric.
So listen, how is Ben in school? Do you know Ben?
I do know Ben.
Did you ever go to a dance with Ben? Did you ever see him at a dance?
No. Well, I see him at dances, but I don't go with him. No.
Is he a wallflower? Just tell me. Are the rumors true?
are the rumors true of what?
Is he a wallflower?
A wallflower?
Does he just stand by the wall and just do that all evening and look depressed? Yeah.
No, he dances.
Or does he get up onto the...
He dances. Yeah, oh.
Is he as much a player as we've heard, as he's told us?
Does Ben's milkshake bring all the boys to the yard?
Yeah, all the boys, definitely. Mm-hmm.
But no girls?
Any girls?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay, guys, you still there?
Oh, well, we appreciate
we've gone in the 1 second.
Yeah. Shut up.
Thank you, Natalie.
So, yeah, that's a Mounted High School for you.
And you put that in. And you put that in. That was actually quite funny, I must admit.